available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Whew, just had a diet cherry Pepsi.
Oh, you're feeling pumped up.
I think it's getting my voice a little screwy.
You are ready to go,
But I am ready. Yeah, we got a big show. We're going to preview the Pac-12 South. We did Pac-12 North last week. We got a few notes to get to, but as always, if you want to email us, we were kind of light on the questions last week, David, not this week. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is email address. Many people took advantage of that. You could also call or text us at 424-532-0678. Got a couple of voicemails for you today. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast or go to the website Pac-12podcast.com to find the old episodes. Over on Reddit, reddit.com/podcast of champions/r/podcast of champions.
Don't miss the R.
You need that. I don't know why that's there.
We've talked about this before. It feels like it's outdated from modern internet times.
Right.
We don't need the R.
Back of the search engines had like categories.
Are there like different letter designations that they're actually going to on Reddit, like U for user? Are they actually going there? We don't need that.
I'm not sure what that is. But anyway, go find us on Reddit. But most importantly, the Apple Podcasting app, leave us a 5-star rating. That's all we ask. It's very, very simple. And you could get $100. We're like 3 weeks in a row, or this is the fourth week now, I think we've done this.
This will be week four.
Congrats to Keon. He's the one that gave us the great review last time. I got his address right here on a $100 jockey gift card that he's going to get in the mail sometime very soon. So people are very quick to respond. I responded to him on his email saying like, hey, thanks for this. I'll send it out. And he's like, he responded, he's like, this is funny because the email says David Woods, but I am almost certain that this is Ryan. I'm like, you are correct.
Correct, sir. did we do Give Me My Underwear It Is a Podcast last time?
I don't remember.
Okay, if not, we have 7 contenders this time.
Oh my gosh.
From John N. USC Trojan, Give Me My Underwear It Is a Podcast.
We might have done that one.
Whatever. Simple and brief. We love it.
Jeff, I get the pun there.
Yeah. Jeffy Boy 123, 5-star. Podcast of Champions. I am a regular listener of this podcast and couldn't be happier. RA and DW make a great team. Their insights into everything Pac-12 is spot on. Love them. What I don't love are the fit of my undies. The saggy rear end, like the Bruin secondary, doesn't seem to do the trick. Keep it up, fellas.
That's a strong one.
Far too complimentary of us, though.
Oh, okay.
This is from Grant Vincent Amiths. Go Ducks! First, I have to say I love this podcast. Usually I listen to Oregon content, but when I crave conference talk, this is the place to go. Keep up the good work. The second thing I want to mention is how your princess rankings are always spot on. Even people without children will enjoy the 20-minute rants that pop up between segments. Unfortunately, I only have 5 stars to give. The only gripe I have is that I wish they had the North team's podcasters as guests more, so if you are not, you need to subscribe. Now, this one also has, as an acrostic, excuse me for the colorful language, fuck the mutts.
Oh.
So, okay. Creativity, formatting, good.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. This is from Juan Noel. Remember that feeling when you were like 13 years old and a girl touched your thigh for the first time? Listening to this podcast is exactly like that, but in reverse. The lights get dimmer, prospects in life feel slightly less exciting, and your heart gets a little bit blacker. But sometimes you just want to feel that way, man. I like that, Juan.
That is a really good, Juan.
All right, this is from Brian _34. Apple Podcast ratings versus the composite. This is a 5-star podcast in the Apple Podcast ratings, but probably only a 2- or 3-star podcast in the podcast composite ratings. It's the number one ranked podcast in its position group and number one in its state. Even higher ranked than the Pac-12's own podcast, it is a top 247 college football podcast nationally. The player comparison for this podcast is Josh Shaw, a former 5-star who is more famous for off-field, off-topic issues, i.e. balconies or Disney princesses, than on-field on-topic issues, i.e. defensive production or actually talking about the Pac-12. I also like that, Brian.
This is really, these are good, this is going to be hard, dude.
And this is from Review of Champions, a bomb-throwing anarchist of podcasts. A self-professed bomb-throwing anarchist debates a QAnon conspiracy believer about not getting into land wars in Asia, Disney princesses, and what types of barbecue your coach would be. Occasionally, they analyze Pac-12 football. In summary, it's better than a fork in the eye.
Who is that one again?
Review of Champions.
Okay.
And then finally, from Utes fan in San Diego, this is a Muppet show. Great to be back listening after that horrid COVID season. I am back to listening on my commute to and from work and love this podcast. I always picture Ryan and David as the two old men from the Muppets bantering back and forth, but for some reason they are in the form of South Park. Appreciate all the info and helping me sound informed and smart to my obnoxious Trojans and Bruins family members.
I mean, I think they're very strong candidates all across the board.
So I like the 13 years old girl touch your thigh for the first time.
Yeah, that's really good one.
I liked Brian 34's about Josh Shaw.
The composite one?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say for me, it is between.
I would say between those two. Like they're
between
all
between those two. The acrostic was also good.
Yeah.
Fuck the Mutts. But I am going to go between Juan's and Brian's, and I think I'm going to go with Juan. That was
the thigh touching one?
Yeah. That one was good. I like the lights get dimmer, prospects in life feel like slightly less exciting, and your heart gets a little bit blacker. But sometimes you do just want to feel that way, man.
All right, Juan. You are the winner.
You are capturing my mood right now, Juan.
But I feel bad because there's some other ones. So here's what we got. So we only have one $100 gift card left from Jockey. And I don't know if you got your stuff. I got like a bunch of underwear.
I am wearing the underwear and the shorts right now.
I'm wearing the underwear too. I got piles of it now. Like
I've got a lot of underwear.
I ordered a lot of stuff. There was like sales too. Like, yeah. So I used a gift card, then paid some money too. But like there were sales. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to get the discounted ones too. And so I got a lot. And I'm sure you do too.
Yes.
And it's I love it.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good boxer briefs.
It's funny that we've had all this other stuff that wasn't underwear from Jockey. And now we do.
Now we do.
All right, Juan, send us an email and then I'll let you guys know. As of now, we won't have any more gift cards, but I think our buddy Tom over at Jockey was willing to send us more. So if we get more, they won't be $100 ones. Maybe they're $50. I don't know, but we'll let you know. But hopefully we'll have a contest for next week, too.
Yes, agreed.
Because those were good stuff. All right. Well, thank you for all the reviews. Those are awesome. 7 reviews. Holy crap. You're giving people money away to review your podcast. It works.
Yeah, we love it. It's a method that we haven't tried before, but now we're loving it.
Everybody wins. Like, our listeners get free stuff.
Just abusing them into doing it worked pretty well for a long time, but now we're actually enticing them with this carrot rather than just the stick.
So we're going to preview the Pac-12 South. Real quick, go through these some notes. So the AP poll came out. More love for the Pac-12 than the coaches poll. Oregon 11, USC 15, Washington 20, but also Utah and ASU making it at 24 and 25. Means a lot to you, I know that.
You know what this has in common with the coaches poll?
Means nothing.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's a coaches poll. I mean, an AP poll, and that's out there. There was an athletic story about a potential alliance between the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12. Could be a scheduling thing where but we're already seeing a lot of schedule, correspondence between those conferences. I don't know if this helps the Big Ten at all because they're already a big boy. I think probably helps the Pac-12 more than anyone. So Klyavkov's got to be like, yes, please, let's do this. But we don't know all the details on it, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
With the Big 12 being like left out in the cold.
Yeah, I think for the Big Ten, it's a philosophical alignment, but also it's future forward if they want to prevent the SEC from continuing to glom on to, everybody. Because in the fullness of time, they may start to poach teams out of the ACC once their TV contract is nearing completion. So for the Big Ten,
their contract goes forever, like
until 2036. But you got to have a big time horizon in this game of thrones.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, but the Big Ten has got, they have a, their deal comes up, they already have a huge deal, like way better than the Pac-12. It comes up before the Pac-12's deal. Like, It's crazy how much money the Big Ten is going to be making. So, yeah, we'll see what comes out of this, but you feel bad for like the Baylors and the Oklahoma States and the TCUs of the world. They're like, hey, what about us over here? Remember we had that meeting?
Yeah,
so no. We'll see what happens there. As far as the COVID stuff, There won't be any COVID canceled. I deleted the drop already. It could be forfeited. There'll be forfeited games, basically. So you lose if you can't field the team this year is the rule.
Great.
You cool with that? I don't think we're going to see any of that.
I think that's fine.
This Washington note's kind of stupid, so I won't read that.
Wow. Did my general demeanor today just prevent you from even reading a note that you wanted to read?
I just put it in there that Washington receivers were wearing goggles while they were catching passes in the offseason.
That's very much a your intern note.
I did it. I put
that's,
it in my own.
That's a Micah note for me.
But I put it for me.
I know, but I love it.
Well, Washington doesn't really have, there's a lot of criticism. They don't have, a lot of playmakers up there at receiver, so they caught, 10,000
You have
passes.
The note in there. You said you weren't going to talk about it, and now we're talking about it more than, the actual significant news in here?
Right.
That's great.
All right.
That's real peak podcasting.
We'll see if they wear, some receivers wear gloves. Washington receivers wearing goggles, apparently. See if that helps them this year. And then Isaiah Hodgins.
Isaac.
I'm sorry. Oh, my God. Isaiah's a different guy. Isaac Hodgins was going to miss at least a month, the great defensive end for Oregon State. So that's a bummer, a big injury there.
A true bummer.
Yeah.
A true bummer.
Oregon State seems to be snake bit.
Yes. More than a bit.
Well, let's preview the Pac-12 South. Why don't we start with
USC Trojans.
Let's.
Unless you think someone else is going to win the South, we'll start with that.
I thought ASU, but we can start with USC.
Okay. I'm going in the Phil Steele order. Trojans, eight starters.
And who better than Phil Steele as an authority on the Pac-12? Certainly not the people who run this Pac-12 podcast.
No, he loves Washington. He thinks that they're going to be good. So he's one of their surprise teams of the year. Them and I think Penn State. Eight starters return on offense and defense. Certainly some significant losses like Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, Talanoa Hufanga, Marlon Tuipulotu. Still a lot of talent coming back. Overall strength ranked number 24, according to Phil Steele, because they got teams like San Jose State, who won the Mountain West, BYU, who plays the entire Pac-12, and, of course, Notre Dame. A lot of transfers in, a lot of transfers out. I've been going to practice. Talent's not been USC's issue over the years. They did upgrade pretty much everything around Clay Helton, but it's still Clay Helton.
Yeah. So are you trying to imply something about what the issue is?
there's a Notre Dame fan site that did an ode to Clay Helton recently. I just retweeted we love Clay Helton as the, when it gets to be that ridiculous, it's just wow. Where are we? And you can't super nice guy. Love him. I mean, talk to him, talk to his wife. Do you feel bad that people are making fun of him? It's hard because he makes $5 million a year. So, if you're making $5 million a year, I would take a lot of criticism too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the Trojans?
A few thoughts.
Okay.
Last year, USC, if I remember correctly, could not run the ball.
Terrible at the football running.
Are they going to be able to run the football this year?
Tried to figure out. They got a lot of starters on the offensive line back. But their best guy's gone, Elijah Vera Tucker, the left tackle. They're probably going to be a freshman starting, maybe both tackles. They did get an offensive line coach who runs the offensive system they run. It seemed very UCLA thing to do, where they had a power offensive line coach that was running.
Do you mean when they had Kennedy Polamalu come in as the offensive coordinator to run man ball with nothing but position coaches who were spread?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
That was cool. It's really cool when you make a switch like that and you don't change the personnel or any of the assistant coaches and expect it to work.
Right.
It's dope.
Why would you do that? Well, they did have, they had Tim Drevno coaching the offensive line. It was, so it seems like the offensive linemen are in a better place. Will they be run the ball effectively? I don't know. They lose Marquis Stepp, who I liked a lot, Stephen Carr, but they bring in Keontae Ingram from Texas, who I like a lot too. He looks good. And Darwin Barlow from TCU, this little fire plug guy. I think they got the personnel. Will they still be able to run the football? I don't know. I think they're going to run it better than last year, but they were bad last year. They just relied on Keaton Slovis, the receivers. And, outside of Drake London, there's a lot of dudes that have been making plays in practice, but Drake London's the stud, and then who kind of emerges from there, we'll see. But I agree with you. If they could be good, they could be certainly above average, just throwing the football around. But if you want to beat, like, you know, if you want to try to win the Pac-12, beat the North team, you want to beat Notre Dame, you have to be able to run the football. And they just weren't able to do that last year.
Okay. Well, yeah. So looking at it, I mean, Keaton Slovis was sacked a bunch last year, but they also threw the ball a lot. So
yeah,
that's probably just a question of rate right there, right? Do you have any issues with their ability to protect Keaton Slovis?
I mean, USC's lost at least two quarterbacks like the last couple of years, and that's with first-round draft picks on the offensive line that are now gone. So I think that's certainly a concern. But if you just look at the efficiency and that, you know, they have those advanced metrics where – you know, picking up those first 4 yards is usually attributed to the offensive line. USC's like stuff rate, all that stuff was poor. So they got to get better at all that stuff. Because Keaton Slovis, if he goes down, you got a true freshman waiting, either Jackson Dart or Miller Moss. So yeah, you need all that stuff. I mean, schedule wise, it's way easier schedule for USC than what it was supposed to be last year. All Saturday games. So that's good. I mean, they're, you know, they play Notre Dame on the road, but they get a bye before they play the Irish. They miss Washington. They miss Oregon. There's no Alabama on the schedule like they had last year. It's set up really well just to, like, I mean, you could sleepwalk to 9-3 almost, you know, like if just talent has anything to do with it. So I don't know. It's set up well, but it could just be like a meh season, or it could be like, hey, they go 11-1 and could be in contention for a college football playoff berth. Who knows?
Yeah, the schedule certainly sets up for Clay Helton continuing his tenure at USC, which I think is the biggest priority fans.
USC fans hate that it was like last year was the one where
I really don't understand why.
He had to play Alabama, Washington, and
you're
Oregon.
Talking about Rose Bowl winner Clay Helton.
Yes. So, yeah. So that's, yes, we'll see what happens. But a lot of talent. Better staff.
Just spoiled USC fans.
Yeah, and a fairly easy schedule. So even if you hate USC, like, literally they could be pretty bad and still do like 8-4. Like, I don't know. But we'll see what happens there. All right. You want to go. So this is the team you wanted second. I will put them or you wanted them first. I'll put them next.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Yeah, so Sun Devils, a lot of dudes back, 9 on offense. Everyone on defense, all 11, they're all back. Like, I have a list of like studs on defense that you got to look out for, like Chase Lucas, Jack Jones, Merlin Robinson, Jermaine Lowell. Like, they're all still there. Like, that was my list from last year. I don't have to change it.
But Jermaine Lowell just went down.
Did he just get hurt?
Yes, at least that was my Cartman report. Hang on. I'm going to.
And Lowell, sorry.
Lowell. God, where is it? Is my Chris Cartman report about this? I saw it. I'm looking for it. Yeah, he's going to have tricep surgery. His season is in doubt.
Oh, well, that's.
And he's arguably one of their most important defensive players.
Well, I'll put that in my notes, unfortunately. Yeah.
Look at me coming with the knowledge, coming with the information.
I love it.
Bringing it, as they say.
Way to bring it, Mr. Woods. Their schedule strength, not that difficult, 63. They're a pretty darling pick in the Pac-12 South for sure. I'm personally not as high on Arizona State right now just because of the scandal stuff, and you're like, what doesn't matter? But three coaches are currently suspended.
Which coaches? Have the names changed?
No, they have the same ones.
Is it still not anybody who actually matters for like in-game coaching and stuff?
Yes.
Okay, then I don't care.
Okay, but you don't feel like it's like a slippery slope, like this is going, there's going to be more? Like
slippery slope's a fallacy, Ryan.
Okay.
I don't believe in it. No, of course, if there's something significant that actually comes of it during the season, but it seems like they're just trying to, you know, gauge the wind and keep throwing an occasional assistant coach at it and hope that makes this go away.
Yeah, I guess that's where we are. But see, we're going to do our picks for the season next week. I don't think I can pick. Like, if I just picked on what Arizona State's on paper, it would be very different than what I think is going to happen. Now, maybe everything gets delayed and they just play the season as normal and it's not that big of a distraction and they win the Pac-12 South. I just have a hard time picturing that right now just because I feel like there's more shoes to drop and at some point something's going to happen.
Well, I mean, end of the day, so I think the loss on defense of Lowell is significant. But when you look at this team, they've got Jaden Daniels, who I think has a chance to be the best quarterback in the league this year. He's one of three or four guys who I think have the opportunity to do that. He's going to be a third-year guy. He's going to be, you know, more or less his peak form is going to come this season. And then you returning, I think it's four of five starting offensive linemen. The offensive continuity, the defensive continuity of a team that was already fine. Like, they were decent enough last year, even with COVID derailing them. I don't know. That to me, especially with this schedule, because you're talking about Southern Utah, UNLV, and BYU. And BYU is on the road, so that's something.
Yeah.
But those are three completely winnable games and should be wins for ASU. BYU, I looked at them recently. They're not a member of the Pac-12, but we should consider them that because they play like five Pac-12 teams every year. They lose everything, almost literally everything. They're last in the country in returning production next year.
Which is weird in a COVID year, you know?
Yeah, very much so. But they were already, I mean, operating with, I think, sixth-year seniors. So it's a situation where ASU should probably go 3-0 in the non-conference. And then during the conference schedule, they don't face Oregon. So... Yeah. That right
they
there.
They miss Oregon and Cal, which is, I mean, Cal could be, you know.
I would say Cal, Stanford, they're probably getting the easier end of that, too, by only playing Stanford. So, yeah, I mean, it sets up. That's probably the reason why I'm higher on ASU. And I think USC also has an easier schedule. And there's no question about that. But ASU is even easier. They don't have a Notre Dame in the non-conference.
You're right. Yeah.
So, for that reason, I think they're... You know, again, if nothing goes horribly wrong with the coaching staff, if they don't lose OC, DC, or head coach, and there's not a huge amount of turmoil, looks like a 9-3 team to me.
I think so. I mean, I agree. I just, it's hard for me to put all my chips in. And we got to talk to Cartman. I want to talk to him because, like, he always, like, kind of sets me straight on this. And, like, I push all my chips in the middle with Arizona State, and then all of a sudden, like, Herm Edwards fired. You're like, oh, okay.
If they were going to do that, they would have already done it.
But if they... This isn't a choice. Like, if it's like, oh my God,
there's going to be a choice because it's not going to be based on an NCAA investigation. It'll be based on their own internal stuff. And they'll wait till after the season at this point.
Yeah. Well, I thought they had to accelerate things because of the eligibility of incoming freshmen and all that.
I'm making the hand motion that we all know and love again.
Yes.
It's just not going to happen.
Okay. Let's go to
Utah Utes.
Another potential Pac-12 South contender. I don't know if you've heard of their coach, Kyle Whittingham, new guy on the block.
Yeah, hasn't been around too long.
17th season there. In Salt Lake, but 10 returning starters on offense, 9 on defense, number 37 ranked schedule because they have BYU and San Diego State both on the road, but they have Weber State at home to open the season. So most of their roster is coming back. Lose a few transfers like Samson Nakua, Brian Thompson, the wide receiver. A couple wide receivers are gone. Jake Bentley is gone there, but you're going to have like the Charlie Brewer show potentially transferring from Baylor, and then Cameron Rising you saw last year from Texas. But a lot of guys back.
Momentarily before he went down for a season-long injury.
Last year.
Yeah, Cam Rising.
But he's potentially back this year.
Yeah. Apparently he's been back and actually tearing it up a little bit in his in camp. So it'll be interesting to see who actually, because I don't think they've named somebody yet.
No, I don't believe so. Obviously, Ty Jordan, the loss of him over Christmas.
Obviously.
I mean, that was terrible. But, you know, they bring in a couple of transfers, TJ Pledger from Oklahoma. And then I think it was Chris Curry from LSU. And there was another one. I'm forgetting right now, but Tavion Thomas was a JUCO guy that came in. So apparently those guys have been doing pretty well in camp. So, you know, you replace the running back spot, which, you know, you had a star in the making there with Jordan. But, I mean, it just looks like, you know, the lines are going to be good. Who's going to, you know, how's the quarterback play going to be? Can they run the football? It just seems like it's another team where, you know, You don't question the identity of Utah football team, and I don't think we will this year either.
It's yet another year where I think Utah is flying a little bit under the radar. Look, I'm kind of poo-pooing a lot of teams returning like their entire offensive lines, but when Utah does it, it feels different because they so effectively use experienced line play seemingly every year. And that's why, obviously, a horrible loss of Ty Jordan, but that running game with that returning offensive line, not super concerned about their ability to produce yards on the ground. Quarterback, I think, is, you know, a real concern, but we've seen very effective Utah teams with middling to poor quarterback play. I mean, look at the Travis Wilson.
Pretty much all of them.
Yeah. So looking at all that, I would say I'm not super worried about Utah offensively. Defensively, I would say they actually took a step back last year. I think the defensive line, you know, they're going to need to be really good. That linebacker core is very good. That secondary was the problem last year. They've got, you know, great talent at cornerback, but getting better play out of that secondary, I think, will be huge for them this year. But yeah, I mean, Utah, I think this happens to us every year because they don't have as many sexy names every single year. But this should be a damn good Utah team. And if you look at the schedule, again, we're talking about BYU, Weber State, and San Diego State.
Yeah.
That's again, a very winnable 3-0 in non-conference. And then
even with two of them on the road, still certainly winnable, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then in conference play, they don't play Washington.
And Cal.
So, again, they're getting the better end of a swing. So I think this is an example of that good scheduling from the Pac-12 a little bit in terms of the timing of everything. But also, it's just lucking out that I think three of the better teams in the Pac-12 South are also getting the better end of their schedule rotations this year.
Yeah. And Oregon gets the, you know, comes to Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Arizona State, you know, comes to Salt Lake. The only one, you know, USC on the road, and that's a tough place for Utah traditionally. They haven't been able to win the Coliseum. But, yeah, it's a definitely a manageable schedule. I think for me, for Utah to, like, win the South again, you got to be – I think they need some playmakers. You need to – a little bit of explosive offense at times. I know it's not really been their thing, but – if you're going to score 24 points every game, you're not going to win them all.
I'm really confident in this newcomer that they've got coming in, Britton Covey.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's going to make a huge impact.
Rookie of the year in the playmaker. Pac-12. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Britton Covey, yeah. He was at the Pac-12 media day.
Are you going? Did you get the invite to his 35th birthday party?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
We had a falling out.
Yeah.
No.
Was it from that thing that you said about him 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it was a sophomore. Yes. And, yeah. All right. The Utes, we'll see where they go. And now let's go across town from where we are.
UCLA Bruins.
The Bruins. We got to get David's take on all this. We're sure about the Dorian Thompson-Robinson thing. He wasn't showing up for the beginning of camp, so we'll get Dave's thoughts on that. But a lot of guys returning. Mm-hmm. Bruce Feldman pointed out, you know, you love that. 10 returning starters on offense, 10 on defense. Middle of the road schedule strength 57, according to Phil Steele. No real significant transfers out of the program, which is good. Some, you know, big losses on the defensive side of the football. No more Dimitri Felton. That's a big loss too. But, you know, getting a guy like Zach Charbonnet to transfer in. Jay Toya coming over from USC, who was really impressive, a defensive lineman. You know, he was impressive for USC in the spring. You know, some it looks like more additions than subtractions this offseason, with a lot of production coming back. A team that, you know, looked like they were on the upswing. What are your thoughts on the Bruins, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think this should be Chip Kelly's best team in Westwood. They return, as Ryan just pointed out, basically everybody. The Dorian Thompson-Robinson thing was, he was out for, I don't know, like exactly 10 days and didn't appear to be injured, so you can read between the lines. I mean,
yeah.
It's COVID quarantine. So he's back. He looks fine, obviously. He's entering his fourth year now in the program. He took the junior leap last year, where he minimized drastically minimized his mistakes. It wasn't like he became like this elite passer or elite runner. He just took out all of the stuff, or not all of it. He took out a lot of the plays that were super negative plays, like those things where he would drop back 15 yards and take a sack. Instead, it was 3-yard sacks. And that obviously drastically increased his efficiency numbers. The offense returns everyone on the offensive line. Center Sam Morazzo might be dinged up to start the year, so they might move John Gaines in there. But Gaines played some center last year, also played guard. So they've got a lot of continuity on the offensive line. Receiver playmaking ability is probably one worry, but running back play shouldn't be. Between Britton Brown and Zach Charbonnet, there shouldn't be much drop-off, if at all, from what Dimitri Felton and Brown were able to do last year. It'll just look a little bit different because they're both big, strong, tough runners, not necessarily as shifty and explosive as Felton. Defensively, that's where the questions really were for me and remain. There have been some interesting developments in fall camp. If you remember listening to the show coming out of spring, I was worried about middle linebacker play with Bo Calvert. He struggled last year playing that position, basically being asked to be a full-time starter for the first time and didn't hold up very well. He's been moved to outside linebacker to the Raider spot, and instead they've got Caleb Johnson and Jordan Genmark Heath, who's a transfer from Notre Dame, working in at the two inside spots. Both of those guys look more instinctual, better tacklers, and just kind of quicker reading what the offense is trying to do. So they could be more effective in that kind of that main area of weakness that I was worried about. And then your boy, Jay Toya, he might make an impact up front this year.
Really?
So if you get those two things right, I think the next worry was safety play. Last year it was a weakness. There's no real cavalry on the horizon for fixing that, so it's got to be somewhat internal among the two starters, Stephen Blaylock and Quentin Lake. But already there's enough signs of improvement just in terms of the decision making from the coaches in terms of who they're going to play at inside linebacker that would make you a little bit more optimistic about the defense's potential to improve.
All right. Excuse me. Schedule's really interesting. Week 0 game.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii. But this is what I love. LSU, I mean, beat Florida last year, but lost to some crap teams in the SEC. Coming to the Rose Bowl, and that would be their first game where UCLA would have the tune-up game. I think that could be a big advantage. Now, I don't know if you know this. Chip Kelly's out-of-conference record isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
But is it realistic to think Hawaii, LSU, bye week, Fresno State, all in the Rose Bowl, the Bruins are like 3-0, and it completely turned things around?
Typical UCLA team, I would say, yeah. I would almost predict the 3-0. Chip Kelly has not been good in these situations, and yes, I don't think there's been a single opponent on UCLA's non-conference schedule the 2 years they actually played non-conference games who's as bad as Hawaii or Fresno State. But those two teams aren't bad. They're Hawaii especially, that one would be something that I would be a little bit concerned about. Todd Graham's a good coach. They returned quite a bit from last year. There's enough there that I would
looking ahead a little bit.
Yeah, there's enough there that I would be a little bit concerned about that. Fresno State, I don't think is going to be good this year. LSU, though, is always very talented. So it depends on how ready they are for the start of the season. What's struck me about the first 2 years under Chip Kelly, not last year because of all the weirdness, but the first 2 years, is it wasn't just that the teams they were playing were good in non-conference. It was that UCLA looked fundamentally unready.
Yeah.
Against Cincinnati in 2019, when Dorian Thompson-Robinson was back there, I mean, he was making some good plays, but then he was just doing stuff that just like dropping the ball, just like running around as if he hadn't taken enough reps running with the ball. It was just like just so many things where they just looked like nervous and unready for, playing at that stage. So I'm interested to see what that looks like. Like if they go in and blow the doors off of Hawaii, even though it's just Hawaii, that might change my outlook for the entire season because, okay, they're coming into this year ready. And that means, because if you look at this schedule to me, no, it doesn't set up as a monster. They do have to play both Oregon and Washington. They don't get the good end of those trips. But overall, it's not a monster schedule. It's about middling for UCLA. But my one big takeaway from it is from my current vantage point, it's a ton of toss-ups. It just looks like toss-up central to me, where there's a lot of games where they're not going to be huge favorites, but not likely to be huge dogs, and it's just going to be 50-50, 50-50, 50-50. But if they blow the doors off Hawaii, if they take care of business in non-conference, which means they go at least 2-1 with a couple of nice blowouts in there, that might change my outlook and might make it, okay, these aren't 50-50 games. There's only a handful of those, and this could be an 8-4 team. But yeah. Right now, looking at this, I'm still saying 6-6, 7-5, somewhere in there.
You know, I think the good start's important, certainly for the Pac-12 with LSU there. At least be, you know, put on a good showing, don't get blown out. But man, starting week 7, like at Washington, Oregon, at Utah, back to back to back, is then a bye after that. But holy cow, that's a tough stretch.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. And not to be discounted in here, UCLA going at USC at the Coliseum. I think we've talked about this on the show before, but I just went through like the historical thing. It's like a 10-point swing in USC's favor when the game is at the Coliseum versus at the Rose Bowl.
Okay.
It's a huge swing for what should be a negligible.
Yeah, right. Shouldn't matter at all.
Thing. And obviously there's noise in that data, but this one is, I think that's significant when it is at USC. UCLA has typically not been very successful in that situation. So there's some factors that certainly play into it schedule-wise, but overall it should be, I mean, what I'll say to UCLA fans, it should be pretty fun to watch. I think UCLA should be pretty good this year, even if the record doesn't necessarily indicate it, and even if they should be a lot better in Chip Kelly's fourth year than they're going to be. But it won't be an unwatchable, terrible mess like it was the first couple of years. It should be a continuation off of what they did last year when it was qualitatively better, even if it didn't, you know, work out record wise. It might be the same thing this year. They might be 6-6, but again, a step up even quality wise from last year.
All right. Let's go over to your buddy Carl Durrell.
Colorado Buffalo.
Got a new defensive coordinator, Chris Wilson. Is there, was coaching the defensive line before. 8 starters back on offense, 8 on defense. A tough schedule, ranked number 9 by Phil Steele, and a big injury already in fall camp. The Tennessee transfer, JT Schrout, quarterback, was injured, and right now it looks like only 2 scholarship quarterbacks are left on the roster. Brendan Lewis and Drew Carter, both are freshmen. Brendan's been in the program, though, for a year. And
can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel bad for JT Schrout.
Yeah,
obviously. And I'm basing this sight unseen on JT Schrout. I don't think I watched a single Tennessee game where he played. But this makes Carl Durrell's decision easier and better, I think, which is he's going to start Brendan Lewis now, and Brendan Lewis is the better option because he can run.
Yeah.
So, I feel
kind
bad.
Of forces his hand.
I feel bad for JT Schrout, right. But I having watched a little bit of Brendan Lewis last year and knowing what college football is and knowing Carl Durrell's, proclivity for experience and statuesque quarterbacks, this might make it a little bit better than it otherwise would be.
Yeah.
Anything that forces decisions on my old friend Carl would probably be beneficial.
I was listening to this one show. I forget who it was, but sometimes when you get an injury like that, there can be a rallying.
It can be galvanizing.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I'm interested.
Everyone wants
to
get behind Lewis. Yeah, and,
and he's the guy. I mean, he's the guy who's been there a year already too. So there might be some, some locker room speculating, but some locker room solidification around him.
Either way, depth is going to be a concern there with only 2 scholarship quarterbacks because, of course, Sam Noyer is transferred out to Oregon State, Tyler Lytle to UMass. Katie Nixon, I've been watching him at practice. He comes over there to USC, transferred out. But, some good transfers coming in as well. Get some inside linebacker help from Robert Barnes at Oklahoma, Jack Lamb from Notre Dame. The big one was Schrout coming in from Tennessee, but obviously he's gone for the season. But tough schedule. They got rid of Tyson Summers, the defensive coordinator from last year. He was a holdover from Mel Tucker's staff. I think he's on staff somewhere in the SEC, but like as a analyst or something. So Chris Wilson takes over there. I covered him when he was at USC. We'll see how his defenses do. This is a 4-2 team last year, David. I mean, they didn't get an opportunity to play USC because of COVID stuff. They could have won the South, and they sort of like kept them out of it. But they did a lot better than I thought they would last year. They got absolutely trucked in the bowl game. But I'm thinking this team takes a step back. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Buffs?
Defensively, I think they should be pretty good. This is going to be one of the first, I think, legitimate tests of Carl Durrell, because I think either way last year went would have been a mulligan because he was hired so late, couldn't make any changes really to the coaching staff, and just kind of inherited what he had and,
right,
you know, tried to motivate.
4-2 is a pretty amazing.
It did great, but hard to take too much. He made a proactive decision because that D wasn't bad last year, and he made the decision to go with Chris Wilson. How that turns out in year one, whether the defense takes a big step back. I mean, they return, I think, 9 starters from last year. If the defense takes a big step back or a small step back, that's a black mark against Durrell. So I'm interested to see that. Nate Landman, from what I'm reading, he should be close to 100%.
Yeah.
After tearing his Achilles last year. So getting him back is obviously huge. And the secondary has returning parts. So I think there's reason to think the defense could be decent. The offense was more the issue last year. I think Brendan Lewis might be more effective than Sam Noyer was. Sam Noyer looked really good at the start of last year and then tapered off drastically.
Right, yeah.
Brendan Lewis, maybe he's able to give them a little bit more consistency, particularly with his ability to make plays with his legs. And then you've got the running back room, where you've got Jarek Broussard, and then the guy Jarek Broussard was understudying for last year before he got hurt. Who? Give me a name. What's his name?
Oh, crap. Never mind. I'll look it up real quick.
Okay. Well, anyway, my long statement notwithstanding, they got to get more offensive production out of them. Alex Fontenot.
Yes, Fontenot. Sorry.
So they've got to get more offensive production this year. It was pretty one note after a while last year. So throwing the ball a little bit better is going to be critical. Durrell's supposedly an offensive guy. In my estimation, he's not really. His offenses have generally been terrible. But again, I'm basing that off of old information. Perhaps he has turned over a new leaf. This second year is going to be an interesting case study for me on whether the decisions and changes he makes make the team worse. And I think we'll be able to tell that to an extent because they do return so much.
Yeah.
On both sides.
The problem is, the schedule is brutal. Okay, first three games are at home, Northern Colorado, great, but Texas A&M and Minnesota. Texas A&M is in Denver, I believe. And it's funny, as we go down the the rankings or the expected order of finish in the South, it's unfortunate that the better teams in the South, the ones we perceive as better teams, have the easier schedules. And then as we go down worse, it gets harder. And you could argue Colorado's the hardest, missing Stanford and Washington State, which could be the bottom two teams, in the North.
Absolutely.
Potentially. You know, we're not too high on Stanford. We'll see. Maybe Stanford ends up being good, and that's a win for. But
two Power Fives in the non-conference. I mean, you add all that together, it's going to be a major struggle to get to 6-6. I think.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality of the schedule. I think Colorado could be better than last year and still be a 6-6 team this year. It's the vagaries of scheduling.
Yeah. I mean, they get USC at home, but they have Arizona State and Utah on the road. They have Oregon on the road, the Bruins on the road, Cal, one of the better teams in the North on the road. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
You get Washington at home. They beat Washington before.
Yeah.
So we've seen that.
We've seen it. And I mean, I'll say, as I always do, I'm rooting for Colorado.
You are a Colorado fan.
I am one of the longtime Buffalo fans.
Yeah. They just have to get the Alamo Bowl Texas thing out of their heads.
Yes.
Because that's not a good way to, it's not a positive taste in your mouth.
Don't carry that into another game against the Texas.
You don't want that. So we'll see what Carl Durrell does in year two for him. And then last up, and not saying this is where they're going to finish, but the team's on a 12-game losing streak. We're going to put them last.
Arizona Wildcats.
Jed Fish, lots of excitement. He's very fun to talk to. He brings over Don Brown from Michigan, defensive coordinator, and Brennan Carroll, Pete Carroll's son, as the offensive coordinator. They got a Bunch of guys back, 8 offensive starters, 9 defensive starters. Of course, Grant Gunnell transfers out to Memphis. So who's going to be the starting quarterback? They got Gunnar Cruz, the transfer from Washington State. Will Plummer was the guy we saw. I think he started one game last year. And then Jordan McLeod's another transfer. He's also on the roster. So, yeah. Was he a transfer or is he a true freshman? I forget. I think he's a true freshman. He's the newcomer.
Yeah.
McLeod. But it looks like it's going to be between Cruz and Plummer. And
with popular support largely rallying behind Gunnar Cruz.
Yeah. The number 7 schedule, according to Phil Steele. So another difficult one. You know, like I said, like missing Oregon State and Stanford. Like this is, as we get towards the bottom of the conference, they have to play. They're all playing Oregon, Washington, and Cal. You know, they're all playing the top teams. So this is not set up well for Jed Fish's first year. But I think, and they got a lot of transfers in. I mean, it's a huge list. And a lot of these guys are going to play. According to Jason Shear,
they're
going to
have to. There was no talent on this roster, or very little. The two big names for me are...
Oh, McLeod was UCF, by the way. So he came in from... USF, sorry.
Got it. The two big names for me are Jed Fish and Don Brown.
Yeah.
That's it. because the thing is, so even bringing in a bunch of transfers, and maybe some of these guys are going to be huge impact, and that more than likely there's going to be a few of them that are just because they're going to be starting. But what's going to tell the tale of whether this can be better than last year's awful team is whether they get better coaching on both sides of the ball. And that's going to be Jed Fish trying to make something out of, I won't say nothing, but something out of very little offensively. And then Don Brown proving his pedigree. I mean, this is a guy who turned out nothing but top 5 defenses at Michigan until last year. Will he be able to do the same with not a whole lot of talent? You know, defensively, I think they've got maybe a little bit more than they had offensively last year, but it's still, they're not very good. If those two coaches can make a huge impact and you know, make something out of very little, this Arizona team, they're not making a bowl game this year, but they could win 3 or 4 games. I mean, I think that's possible. It's just a matter of whether their coaching advantage is significant enough. Because I really like Don Brown. I think he's been a great defensive coordinator. And Jed Fish, I was impressed with him in his 1 year at UCLA. But that was with UCLA-level talent. What's he going to do? Trying to install his... He runs basically a pro-style spread, like so many of these other offenses these days. How's he going to marry that to Arizona talent level? And not even just... typical Arizona talent level, but down Arizona talent level.
Yeah.
That's going to be a question. And we're not going to make any definitive answers about that in year one unless they're really positive. Really negative, it's just the talent.
Right.
But really positive, then I think you can start talking about that and you can start selling it and recruiting. And I think this is a pure upside year, I think, for Jed Fish. If they can get 4-8 and they can look exciting on offense or defense at any point, they'll have something to sell in recruiting. They're already recruiting, I think, better than anybody had any right to expect from a 0-12 the last 12 games Arizona team. And if they actually have a little bit to sell, like looking just somewhat playable on the field, then that could take off to the extent that recruiting can take off in Tucson.
Yeah. You look at this team, I'm not sure, you know, offensively where it's going to be, but you're talking about a defense with Don Brown that you trust him. There's names like Anthony Panda, you know him, like he's a good linebacker. You know, Christian Roland Wallace was a great corner, but they bring in Isaiah Rutherford, who's probably going to start from Notre Dame at one corner spot. You know, they bring in a linebacker from Vanderbilt, Kenny Herbert, who's, you know, got a good chance in there. Another linebacker, Jerry Roberts from Bowling Green. There's a bunch of guys that are transferring in that are going to start or definitely on the two deep. So it's going to be a different kind of roster than what we saw from last year, but I think they're going to be coached up better. So I think that's going to be a big part of this. So they should be a feisty team. I still think, you know, it's a tough schedule. They're going to play better. They're not going to continue the losing streak. But, you know, what is 4-8? That'd probably be a pretty big improvement, I would think, especially with that schedule.
Yeah, looking at the schedule, I mean, non-conference, it's important to split this into non and and conference even more than other teams, because in the non-conference they're going to take a BYU team that no one knows, but I would expect is not going to be very good this year based
in
on
Las
how,
Vegas,
based on how little they're returning. Arizona can win that because they return quite a bit. BYU returns basically nothing. It could be Arizona time. San Diego State, sight unseen with San Diego State, but I'll just say they'll probably be favored in that game. But then Northern Arizona, I mean, they could go 2-1 in non-conference, and then it's just a matter to get to 4-8. They just have to steal or not steal two wins in conference play, and between, I don't know, Cal, Washington State, UCLA at Tucson, Colorado, I could see it happening. I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, and they've certainly stolen some games against better opponents in the past when they've been decently coached. So, I think 4-8's on the table. I think that's probably the top end expectation for me with Arizona, and that's if things like go really, really well. But I think that would be enough for them to sell in recruiting.
All right. Well, let's. Why don't we take a quick break and come back and go through the questions. Back in a minute.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, we're back here on the podcast of champions. We're running a little late, a little short on time, David. Got some stuff that we got to do. It's kind of busy with fall camp. We're not going to get to the voicemails today. We got a couple of voicemails. Evan, you left like a two-minute voicemail. Maybe call back and leave like a one-minute one. That'd be better. For next week, but we'll try to get to as many questions as we can. Apologies for not getting to all of them. We'll do our best. I think we're starting off with
Five Paws Way Up.
Yes, Five Paws Way Up.
All right, this is from Drag Racing Duelist. Tom Cruise's dog Bledsoe here. As I lay here on the Indian Sun Bear rug in Tom's underground bunker, while Tom sits at his desk in the corner on a call with Washington State coach Nick Rolovich discussing government covered up of aliens in rural Idaho, among other things that I'm doing my best to not pay attention to. I instead focus my ears on the podcast Tom has playing in the background. It's the best Pac-12 podcast around, even if I have to listen to Tom complain and insult the hosts about the lack of WSU content. I get to lay here and listen to semi-quality takes on all 12 teams in the Pac-12 brought to us by two guys somewhere in California. As a dog, I'm quite annoyed at Tom's Cougar fandom, but as my owner is Tom Cruise, that's the least of my worries. Your podcast is the only thing stopping me from going full Cujo, so please keep up the great work. I'm unable to leave a review as Tom thinks all Apple networks do a massive amount of spying and he doesn't want Apple knowing his secrets. I'm also obligated to tell you the one good idea Tom has had lately. Team up with Dr. Pepper on a massive marketing deal and rename the conference to Dr. Pepper 12 Pack.
Ooh, I kind of like that.
Love the whole thing. That was a great email.
It was a great email. I never have talked to Tom Cruise's dog before. Didn't know his name was Bledsoe.
Super excited about it.
That is very cool. The dogs can email and everything. I love that. And I'm sure he feels that way about Apple products.
I'm positive.
Yeah, I bet you that's like all true.
Yeah. I think that was written by Tom Cruise's dog.
We need to get sponsored by the Dr. Pepper. But by the way, like I got a diet cherry Pepsi here. I love the Diet Cherry Dr. Peppers. I can't find them anymore. Like, I could go over to Smart and Final and grab them. So I would like any Dr. Pepper people out there, we'd love to, you know, we'd drink your stuff all the time. We'd talk about you. It'd be great.
Dr. Pepper, it's fun to say. Dr. Pepper people.
It is. Wasn't that pick a pe- like there was a commercial for that back in the
Peter
day.
Peter Piper picked a pe- yeah, yeah, the whole thing.
All right. Let's see. We got some promo things here. I'm sure they called him Cleaves. This is from our buddy John Bassalone, who sent me, he's Trader Joe's guy, sent me some really cool desserts. So the remember the brookies that we got at Pac-12 Media? Well, you didn't, but I did. And I was, you know, and I was like, eh, meh. So he sent me like Trader Joe's brookies, and they were legit. They were like, they didn't crumble like the ones at the Pac-12 Media Day. So he sent me some.
Why didn't John send me any?
I don't know. Actually, maybe he did, and I just ate them.
You probably did.
He didn't
remember,
say...
remember our first year doing this when the guy in Washington sent you cupcakes?
Yes.
For both of us, and then you ate them all?
I don't know if I ate them all, but I probably did, yeah. Well, yeah. You weren't, like, around. I was trying to, like...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Was any effort made? Were any text messages
there
exchanged?
There was probably some. Yeah, you just don't respond to the text messages. You know that's true. You can't argue with that one.
Fair enough.
Okay. So it says, Ryder Dave, I'm thinking of how to best refer to the current Pac-12 commissioner. I've started calling him Cleaves. Picture, if you will, a Boston University dorm room circa 1988. Preppy guy on BU rowing team. Hey, Cleaves, you going out tonight? Cleaves, no, I have a test tomorrow. And someday I'm going to be the commissioner of a Power 5 college football conference. Preppy guy. What do you talk about? Miami and Florida State dominate college football. And what the hell is a Power 5 conference? Come on, Cleaves, let's go drinking. Cleaves, yeah, okay, but give me a second to put on my Sperry's. It had to be his nickname in college. Fast forward to today, I think Cleaves, unlike Champagne Larry.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
Actually has a clue how to do his job and was meeting with Bob Bowlesley because he knows he better be making some contingency plans if Oregon, Washington, UCLA, and USC bolt for the Big Ten. I would be shocked if he was looking at adding the Big 12 leftovers to the current Pac-12 conference. Question, after his listening tour is over, which of the following will be his first decision? He actually just, he's at Oregon right now, I think, as we speak. I thought he was supposed to go right after Media Day, but something must have happened, but he's up at Oregon now. So which is what would most likely be his first decision? One, restructuring, rebranding, and relaunching the Pac-12 network. Two, announcing a move of the Pac-12 headquarters to Las Vegas, LA, or Phoenix. Three, realignment or dissolving the conference divisions for the 2022 season. Four, holding a press conference to announce radical changes to the Pac-12's approach to football officiating. Five, none of the above, fill in the blank. Thanks for your never-ending dedication to the Conference of Champions, John and Brea.
My guess would be number two, because you can do that preemptively and well in advance of the actual move. You can say by the, you know, spring of 2022 or the fall of 2022, we're going to open offices in Las Vegas or Los Angeles or whatever and get them out of San Francisco. But I think the reason not to do it immediately is because there are some people who work there who wouldn't, who would be left off because they wouldn't be relocating. So,
yeah, and I think the divisions thing would happen if we were going to go to a playoff right away. The officiating, I think he's aware, but I don't know if there's going to be like some radical change like right away. I think it's something he
those
wants
are
to
the
fix.
Kinds of things. So with four, I'm sure that's a focus, but it's the kind of thing where you want the proof to be in the pudding before you start announcing things. How many times did the Pac-12 make that mistake? We're going to do a huge revamp of our officiating. We're going to hire this guy. It was in like 2015 when they said they were going to do that, and the officiating remained bad, and then suddenly it's like a joke.
Yeah.
You said you were going to do this, and then it turns out it's garbage. Just do it. Like, do whatever it is you're going to do. Don't need to announce it. It's not a PR. Like, this is the PR of it will be stop having your games made fun of by incompetent officiating.
Yes.
The PR isn't the announcement. The PR is the proof of what you're doing, like what actually happens on the field. So I don't think that's the kind of thing where you hold an announcement. Moving the Pac-12 headquarters, though, that scores some points with the people who have actually been paying attention, and not just scoring points with John Wilner and John Canzano who've been making fun of him, but also the athletic directors and the various, you know, stakeholders at all these different universities who are also like, why is the conference spending so much damn money just to be in the middle of San Francisco?
Yeah. No, and he, when on the listening tour, we had that little happy hour with him, and talked. I mean, there's a lease, so they have to get out of the lease. But I mean, he said something along the lines of like, it's like another $500,000 per school.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have to pay.
Yeah, it's huge, that kind of money. Especially yeah. when things are getting dire in terms of the money imbalance.
All right. You want to do the USC one next?
Yes. This is from Jeremy in Mapleton, Utah. A few days ago, I was talking to Brad in Portland, a POC emailer, about USC's place in the conference. We agree with the idea that the Pac-12 should prioritize USC's happiness and position. However, as a fan of another South Division team, I disagree that I should want USC to be strong for the good of the Pac-12. I am cheering for the success of my team. I would never end a season saying, what a great Pac-12 season. USC is dominant again and is headed to the playoff. Also, Utah was 10-2 and is going to the Alamo Bowl as a top 15 team. Let's all enjoy the respect for our conference. No, I want to end a season saying, hell yeah, Utah's 11-1 going to the Pac-12 championship with a great chance of going to the playoff or Rose Bowl. Sure, I want Oregon and Washington to be strong because playing a good team in the Pac-12 championship is good, but I want to win the Rose Bowl. Having another powerhouse in the South Division makes it much harder for my team to reach its goals. Long live Clay Helton. Yeah.
The problem is, Jeremy, if USC's not good, and they leave, you're not going to the Rose Bowl anymore. Doesn't matter what you do. You go 12-0. Like, then you're out.
Yeah, but that's a different thing than what he's saying.
Well,
it's not just if USC's, I mean, USC doesn't have to be good to stay in the conference. And USC doesn't have to be good for the conference to be good.
Well,
no, it doesn't. I mean, if you look at historically,
it's not been good since USC's been
well,
bad.
USC isn't bad right now. What I'm saying is, like, USC right now is a strong team in the Pac-12 South. They're just not at their, like, peak strength. But USC doesn't need to be peak strength for the conference to be good. Somebody needs to be at peak strength. Oregon or Washington needs to be at peak strength. Sanford needs to be at peak strength. UCLA, God forbid, ever be as good again. They could be at peak strength. USC just needs to be USC, which is consistently, like, a 9-win team. And then, you know, every so on just blowing up because they have nothing but talent. But historically, they don't need to be dominant for the conference to be good. 2013 is the best recent year for the conference, and USC was fine. They were good.
But
they weren't the peak team.
Yeah.
I think USC isn't bad right now. They had one bad year, but they're, and this isn't even me just being like a Clay Helton apologist. They're fine. Like they're what they are is bad for USC, but they're not bad. They're not bad by any reasonable definition of the word. They're like a top three team in the league at worst.
Right.
So anyway, kind of going afield, but in this context, I get what he's saying because you know, the preference isn't to just sit here and watch great Pac-12 games. It's, you know,
no, you want your team to do well.
Right.
And he's saying too, like, you want to they should prioritize USC's quote unquote happiness or whatever, but you don't need them to be great.
Right.
You don't need, you want Utah to win the South every year and win the conference and go to the Rose Bowl. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not a matter of like every time you're setting up the schedule for USC to be great. Like you want to obviously be cognizant of the vagaries of things every year. You know, if Utah is setting up with 20 returning starters in a normal year, not just a COVID year or whatever, then you're probably going to want to set up the schedule so that Utah looks really good, because the point is to have an elite team come out of the conference, not for it just to be USC, no matter if they're going to be a 8-4 quality USC or a 10-2 quality USC. You want it to be set up for the success of whoever has the best potential of being an elite team that year.
Yeah. But I would say if you're Utah, you should root for Oregon to beat Ohio State. You know,
I'm Washington to
beat Michigan. You should root for UCLA to beat LSU.
Honestly, for me, like from a familiarity standpoint, even growing up as I did as a UCLA fan and a, you know, obviously a USC hater, I root for USC in non-conference games, both because it's funny when Clay Helton wins those and has to continue as
the
USC
head
coach.
The irony, yes.
But I go into it, and then during the game, I inevitably start rooting for bad things to happen to USC because it's funnier to tweet about.
Yes.
Like, it's a lot funnier to tweet that USC is, like, gong show catastrophe than it is to say, oh, USC beat Ohio State or whatever.
If, like, they're, like, have, like, negative rushing yards in the fourth quarter against Washington State, it's fun
to
tweet that out.
You have to admit that, like, everything bad that happens to USC has, like, an inherent comedy to it.
Oh, that for sure.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's just so funny every time. Like, even the scandals, which are, like, you know, obviously dark and serious a lot of times, but, like, just the way it happens at USC. Like, the Josh Shaw thing, like, the way it happened was just, like, this is just an absurd tragicomedy. Like, this is incredible.
I mean, all the Sark stuff. Like,
oh, my God, the Sark stuff. And it's like, this is a guy dealing with, like, real struggles. And I'm not trying to make light of him or his struggles.
But the way it happened.
But it is so funny that this is happening to USC.
And because you had such incompetent leadership. Like, sometimes good leadership just nips some of that stuff in the bud. It doesn't
Like,
Josh Shaw doesn't get out if you had,
Pat Hayden coming down to the field to yell at the officials and get a flag against him or whatever the hell that was that one year. Or nearly get a flag against him. That was so funny.
Yeah.
Like Pat Hayden just being lit on the field. Like, it's so good. We love it.
He likes his drinks. All right, let's move on. Hithloday. Argentum a Aris.
All right, I'll look that up. You read.
Last week, Ryan invited listeners to, quote, please yell at us if we miss something obvious in your Pac-12 North previews. I should thank anyone doing so to be foolish, as they met the standard of quality and preparation you boys have established for this product. Specifically, that the following segment on Coach Cage matches for 8 minutes was double the length of any preview, culminating as it usually does with your Kyle Whittingham zaddy fantasies. I guess he's not a big fan of Kyle Whittingham. The guy wrestles grizzly bears.
I think he's just more just making fun of us.
I know, but he also thinks that we give too much credit to Kyle Whittingham, I believe.
All right, so Argentum is silver. Aris, gold, I would guess?
Silver and gold.
Silver and gold.
Okay.
Okay, great.
That's A is the, okay, your colleague Chris Partman of Sun Devil Source posted a provocative Twitter thread on Friday, starting here, and then I saw some of this stuff he had tweeted out. Looks like Jed Fish and Arizona will spend the next 4 to 5
years. Can I just say, in that thread, I learned a lot about the internal dynamics of the journalism beats in the state of Arizona.
Oh, really?
Lot of, like, you know, claws out fighting in that.
People were calling out Cartman.
Well, you had reporters who cover Arizona getting into it with Cartman, and Cartman giving it right back. And it's just like, guys, I hope you all understand nobody cares about Arizona football.
Was Lev involved in that? Was Lev like?
No, Lev wasn't. It was Ralph Amsden.
Yeah.
And Jason, our man Jason, got into it a little bit. But he and Cartman kept it professional, but Ralph and Cartman kind of got into, like, some interpersonal stuff. It was, if you haven't already, strong recommendation to check out this Twitter thread. You probably have to go back to Friday to find the start of it with Chris dropping this bomb.
So he was saying that basically, like, you know, a bunch of local three-star recruits with modest Pac-12 interest will not enable enough success to remain employed.
But not just local. He was very specific in saying Arizona three-stars. They're which is going to get into Hithloday's point here.
The hit rate on the local three-star guys becoming multi-year starters at ASU and other Power 5 schools is poor, like get you fired poor. People may not want to see it for what it is, but those are the facts. Look at the state of Arizona three-star recruits the last 15 years and tell me otherwise. And he came back, and I think he tried to, I don't know if back off of those, but he tried to clarify some of the comments. But
I don't think he backed off, and I think he, I mean, just my own, he has a point. The question is whether it's a fair thing to criticize Arizona for right now.
Yeah. So Hithloday says, in the broad sense, of course, he's right. Stars matter, and not hauling in blue chips typically means losing to teams that do. But since Fish has to start somewhere, and getting three stars in his programs, getting three stars is his program's ceiling right now. There's really no other way of reading Cartman's full comments about where they're from. Then he believes three stars from the state of Arizona are systematically overrated, and that's why ASU has been foregoing them. Do you boys find this to be true in your experience? Who's responsible for rating Arizona recruits anyway?
There's no fundamental difference in their rating strategies for all the Western states, I think, now.
No.
It's basically a combination of Brandon, Greg, Blair.
Blair Agüero is a big part of that. Yeah. I think the big problem is there's a pretty wide range of three stars. Like, three stars is an enormous bucket. And there's some that are, like, ranked 400 that are, like, on the board, you know, the cusp of being a four-star. And there's some that are ranked, like, 2,100 that are, like, well, we, there's some athleticism there, but we're not really sure about them. You know?
I don't find any fundamental difference between the, like, three stars that come out of Phoenix or, you know, wherever, and the three stars that come out of L.A. If that's the question, no, I don't think there's any fundamental difference there. The point he's making, if you take out the Arizona emphasis, is not wrong. I think if you're building a program just based off of three stars, You've got to be a really exceptional coach, and you've got to have a really defined sense of who you are and what your system is. And you've also got to take advantage of the transfer market. You've got to basically be Utah. You've got to be that kind of level of a program. And it remains to be seen whether Jed Fish is going to be able to do that. We're not going to know in year one if that's the sort of strategy that he's building around. But also, to your point, Hithloday, what the hell else is he supposed to do right now? He's recruiting to an 0-12 Arizona team, which, okay, Arizona already recruits like crap every year. And now he's recruiting to 0-12 Arizona. The fact that didn't they pull in a friggin' 4-star out of L.A. recently? So, look, I think he's doing exceptionally well given the circumstances of how he is supposed to be recruiting right now. I think it's interesting to tweet about that at this point from Chris. And I think it's, you know, meant in fairness, like he saw Dennis Erickson do the same thing or attempt to do much
right,
the same thing.
And it's not like he's saying like, hey, ASU tried this. It didn't work.
Right. Yeah. And not build the thing. But I think at this point, I think it's a relatively unfair criticism of Jed Fish or a critique or whatever you want to call it. But that's all that he can do right now.
Yeah.
Maybe eventually it gets better than that, but for now, that's what he's got available in state. And frankly, most Arizona really highly ranked guys don't go to either of these two damn schools. They go out of state. They don't stay in Arizona.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Just feels like a little tiff.
Yeah, a little tiff going on. But go read that thread for sure. You're up next. This is a lot of like reasons why Oregon's not good. Do we need to do this right now? Or is this like,
we can, we're crunched for time, Peter in Vancouver. If you want to resend this for next week, feel free. Otherwise we're going to skip it. He basically, he's a Washington fan and he doesn't think Oregon's good.
Yeah. And there's like 10 bullet points of why they're not going to be good, which
I'm sure it's all fair and good. This is from Paul Webfoot, All-Star Pack coaching staff. Hello, champions. I'm wondering how you would build the staff for your teams if you could poach any coach from the conference. But first, a joke. I'm only going to read the joke because there's no way we can even name 11 assistants in the conference. How do you keep the Cal Golden Bears football team off your lawn, paint it like an end zone, and put up goalposts? I love that. Okay.
Nice.
We will also do this next week. Because now we know what you're talking about, but we wouldn't be able to do this with no preparation, Paul, and also we don't have time.
Right.
So I will now read Peter in Vancouver's other question.
Okay, yeah, this is better. This is shorter.
This is from Peter in Vancouver. Pac-12 non-conference games. Gentlemen, Pac-12 teams are scheduled to play 10 games against Power 5 opponents in non-conference games this season. Colorado versus TCU, UCLA versus LSU, USC versus Notre Dame, Cal versus TCU, Oregon versus Ohio State, UW versus Michigan, and Stanford versus Kansas State, Vanderbilt, and Notre Dame. I think that the over-under on those games is 3.5. What are your guesses? He also doesn't have all of the teams.
Is he just talking about the first 2 weeks or something? Oh, no, there's not. I don't think that's all of them.
No, Arizona has two. Wait, no, not Arizona.
Colorado. Oh, he put Colorado in there. No, did he?
Minnesota's on the schedule for somebody. Who was it? Colorado is versus Texas A&M.
And Minnesota. Yeah.
So this is revise and resubmit, Peter. Sorry.
Yeah, we're I don't think you got all of them. So,
and also a couple of them are wrong. So revise and resubmit.
Peter, you're not
Peter, I'm sorry. You're a longtime listener and we love you, but please resubmit both questions.
All right. Eric wrote in, what if? I know there's actual football very soon, and this pod is more about The Mandalorian, and is that coming back, by the way?
It should be, just without that one actress.
Oh, because she was like anti-vax or something?
Well, she was doing something bad.
There was something bad. Oh, there was something.
No, no.
I don't remember what she did, but there was something bad. She was badass, though, too. Okay, more about the Mandalorian and princesses than the Mouse's MCU TV offerings. But with the release of What If last week, on Disney Plus, what are your favorite Pac-12 related what if hypotheticals and the butterfly effect that they'd unleash? As an Oregon fan, I'd always wonder, what if Dennis Dixon didn't get hurt in 2007 or Stanford in 2012, if in a couple of certain plays a block was made and the third player landed a couple of inches further and out of bounds? Conversely, what if USC offered D'Anthony Thomas as a running back? Thanks, Eric.
The Dennis Dixon one is a huge one because do you remember how much of a monster Oregon was?
Oh, they were
coming into that UCLA game where Dennis Dixon tears his ACL before the game and then UCLA shuts him out 16-0. That was Chip Kelly. That was Chip Kelly's first year as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
They were an absolute monster. Like that would have been a national title contending Oregon team. So that's a huge one for me, has always been. Another one that I think is fun is what if USC had actually successfully hired Dennis Erickson instead of Pete Carroll?
Oh, wow.
Like, what about that one?
Yeah.
Like, would Dennis Erickson have been able to do even 80% of what Carroll did?
Probably not.
I like Dennis Erickson. I think he's a good coach, but I don't know. I don't know if he would have brought the recruiting energy. So that's always an interesting one for me because he was choice number one, if I remember correctly, from that period.
I think he was, yeah. They tried to get Mike Riley and stuff too, I think.
Yeah. Well, it was like Mike Riley, Dennis Erickson, who else? Well, anyway. Those are some significant ones.
USC's had a bunch. Like, I mean, like Reggie Bush doesn't try to lateral to a walk-on in the Rose Bowl. Like they were like up 12 or something.
But that's like a harder what if because that's basically asking the entire program to not have that insane hubris at that point.
Yeah.
Because that was the whole thing is like Reggie Bush did that because that was the entire culture of that team by that point. We can do anything.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want.
They were very confident in that game.
And so they were just like, okay.
Like if they actually won that game, how does everything change? I mean, there was like the Stanford game that sort of launched Jim Harbaugh's career, yes. To Rita Pritchard and all that. Like that was huge. Like Mark Sanchez losing to Oregon State up on the, US, like the 13-9 UCLA game, like, USC's got like there's so many what ifs, like stupid little plays that another national championship or two could have happened. So there was a bunch of those, at least on the USC side. There's some injuries around the conference.
If Michael Dyer was ruled down in the BCS championship game against Oregon.
Yeah.
That's a significant
Oregon can win
Oregon,
a title.
Oregon wins a national title. Does Chip Kelly, I think he still does, like eagerly leave for the NFL at the first real opportunity, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
If Chip Kelly stays at Oregon, wins a championship, stays at Oregon, like what,
That thing would have kept rolling. I mean, as bad as Chip Kelly has gotten, I don't think he would have messed with something that was working. There's a few. I mean, there's UCLA in 2004, if they'd beaten USC in Durrell's second year, where Spencer Havner was not down and should have had a pick six. Or a fumble return for a touchdown. I forget what it was. I don't know if that would have been significant, but it would have changed the game because then they would have gone into that 10-2 year with a little bit of momentum too from the previous season. Nobody cares about UCLA. What am I even talking about?
No, they care. What if Tyrone Whittingham like went 1-11 instead of 0-12 at Washington? Does it change the course of? I don't know.
Oh, man.
The Bush push game, like, what if...
If Stanford doesn't foolishly schedule that Northwestern game for 9 in the goddamn morning.
Yeah.
Or just don't play on the road in your first game against Northwestern to start the season. Because that 2015 Stanford team was maybe the best of the entire Shaw-Harbaugh era.
Yeah.
They could have been a playoff team.
Like, Washington's run a few years ago, they lost to USC at home, but that didn't matter. They still made the playoff.
Well, like, what if you injected Jake Browning with the Captain America serum?
Yes.
Right?
Well, they played like Alabama or something, right? They just got smoked in the playoff. But, like, I'm trying to think of, like, the Oregon could have won. Like, Washington, when they made the playoff, they couldn't have won. So there's nothing, like, you would change to be like,
no.
Like, what if Alabama's bus crashed or something? was it Alabama? I forget who they played. I think it was Alabama. Was it Alabama that they played in the playoff?
Yes, it was Alabama. Yeah. Alabama, Washington played with them for a little bit.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thanks, Eric, for that one.
And then that's it.
Is that all we got?
That's all we got. So, we finished in under the time we allotted for ourselves.
Sweet. Well, thanks, everyone. Sorry we cut some of the questions short this week. No.
If you guys want to resubmit them, you're more than welcome to. Just copy and paste them into a new email because we generally don't go back. But if you want to, you are more than welcome to. Sorry we couldn't get to them all.
Yeah, I think I think Evan and Tempe had like a 2-minute question about Sonny Dykes or something at Cal.
Jesus Christ.
Like, I think it was that, or it was Perk. One of, I can't remember. There was a Perk in it, but there was like, what happened with Sonny Dykes? And essentially, like, his offenses were good, his defenses were terrible.
And he didn't want to be at Cal ever.
Yeah, he's a Texas guy. He didn't really.
He never wanted to be at Cal.
Yeah, it just wasn't working. And they signed him to an extension, and he's out. And like, he was just like, they fired him, which was a pretty bold move because he still had like 3 years left on the deal. So, yeah. That didn't work out. And I forget what the other one was. Something about cheating. But, yeah, they were both pretty long. So resubmit those if you want them back, and we'll take care of them. But, all right, that's going to wrap things up this week for the Podcast of Champions. Next week, we're going to pick all of the games. So I got to do that at some point. I'm going Catalina. I don't know if I can pick games while I'm in Catalina, but maybe I'll do that. You know,
maybe stop taking so many goddamn trips, Ryan.
I'm going camping in Catalina.
Going camping.
It's like 25 miles away.
Yeah, but you're somehow not able to pick games while you're doing it.
I'll try it.
Maybe prioritize.
Maybe I'll bring a little notebook or something and pick some games.
Just think about them sitting under the stars on the beach.
Yeah. What are you doing? I'm camping, picking games. Probably won't happen. So
almost certainly not.
Yeah. The likelihood of me picking before our show next week is low, but I'll work on it. We'll see what he can do. All right. Well, that's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.